Hello, this is Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, May 29, 2025. Yearbook policies to change in wake of unapproved edits. Israel omitted on World Map of Cultures page. Central High School is offering reprints and corrections of the 2024-25 yearbook after Israel was omitted from a world map in a section of the book. In an email to students and their family members, Central Principal Joe Williams said the omission was intentional but not approved by the school or the yearbook supervisor. I understand the significance of this error and the hurt and offense it has caused some of our students and families, Williams said. An oversight of this nature is not reflective of our values or the educational experience we aim to provide. The map is on pages 32-33 in the Cultures section of the yearbook, highlighting Central students' connections to other countries and cultures. Williams said that once this omission was brought to the school's attention, administrators closely scrutinized the pages and identified other edits that were not approved. He said the school is working with the yearbook publishing company to create sticker pages of what the pages were supposed to look like, which will be mailed to families who received yearbooks. The school will also be offering reprints to anyone who declines the sticker option as long as the current yearbook is dropped off in the main office by June 13th. Williams said the yearbook production process is under review to avoid similar incidents in the future. We value the trust you place in us and are committed to ensuring our publications accurately and respectfully represent the rich diversity of our student body, he said. And there's a photo on the front page of the News Gazette with the headline, Looking Up on Life, and the caption, Tuscola senior Leah Patterson takes a selfie with her girls' track and field teammates after being named the News Gazette's 24-25 High School Female Athlete of the Year. The multiple state champion was presented with a framed News Gazette front page and a championship belt from Copper Creek Contractors during a surprise ceremony at the team's season-ending banquet Wednesday night in the school's gym. Champaign County Court, man who admitted viewing child porn at library on trial. A man allegedly caught on video viewing child pornography at the Champaign Public Library in 2022 now stands trial despite admitting to police that it was him in the footage looking at the images. James C. Tippett, 70, of Urbana, has been charged with 4 counts of possession of child pornography. In court Wednesday, Assistant State's Attorney Eileen Keeley presented footage of a police interview from December 8, 2022, after Tippett was arrested for the November 28 incident. In the interview, Tippett immediately acknowledged that he had been approached by library security and assumed that's why he had been arrested, but apparently wasn't sure why he had been approached. Officers informed him another library patron had used their phone to record what he was looking at on the computer. Tippett told the officers that he used library computers fairly often because he did not want to spend the money on a home computer. Most of what he did on the computer, he said, was update his Facebook pages and wait for content to upload to Facebook. While waiting for it to upload, Tippett said he would go down online rabbit holes that led him to sites he shouldn't be looking at. One example he shared was Googling nude men out of curiosity, though he repeatedly emphasized not being attracted to men. I'm fascinated by it, so this is what guys do at home, Tippett said. He seemed to believe that anything considered porn would not be available on Google, leading the officers to repeatedly tell him that pornography of consenting adults is legal and can be found easily. Tippett claimed that he was looking up the images out of curiosity, not because he was attracted to the people in them, and stumbled on images of underage children by accident. I don't know why I started looking at that stuff, he said. I'm not into that. At other points, he said that he was fascinated by anything not socially acceptable and derived excitement from the possibility of being caught. Tippett compared it to drinking alcohol underage, then finding it less fun as an adult who could purchase it legally. He told the officer several times that the arrest had scared him off looking anything like that up in public, and he would not be returning to the Champaign Library. Eventually, the officers asked if he wanted to see the video, and Tippett agreed despite not wanting to see himself reduced to such a spectacle. Keeley said the video does have visible images of undressed children and thus could not be shown publicly in court, but Tippett's reactions as he watched it in the interview were visible. "What an old fool," he said, looking at himself in the footage. "Look at that." Tippett exclaimed he was shocked at what he was seeing, but couldn't help but be interested in what people would post online, like a moth to a flame. "That was a bad one, all right. I couldn't believe my eyes," Tippett said. "Well, that's all it takes. You got me, I guess." He said that if he had known someone would film him, he would not have been looking at child pornography on the computer. "I should have asked to have a lawyer for all this, but I can't deny what's right in front of me," Tippett said. Tippett's lawyer, defense attorney Chris Tishner, brought a librarian as a witness who said that when she went around the area Tippett was using the computer in, she did not see him looking at pornography. The trial is set to continue today with closing statements from both sides and a likely decision from Champaign County Judge Roger Weber. New route with limited Market Street service proposed. Drivers will turn around in Apollo area. After hearing concerns from social service agencies about the potential impacts of a proposed route, the Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District has decided to take a different approach. The MTD Board of Trustees voted Wednesday afternoon to implement a route that would provide limited service to North Market Street once the new service year begins on August 10th. Operations Director Jay Rank, who recommended the route, said that there would be trade-offs no matter what approach MTD took. "I don't believe there's a right or wrong answer," he said. The Salvation Army of Champaign County and the Living Alternatives Pregnancy Resource Center previously expressed concerns about a proposed route that would have dropped their clients off at the corner of East Market View Drive and North Market Street. Both organizations said that the quarter-mile walk would be an obstacle to the vulnerable individuals they serve. Managing Director Carl Natt said that the MTD's options for serving the area are limited due to its inability to enter mall property once the new service year begins. According to local officials, the mall asked the MTD to stop service to its property after the MTD refused to enter an agreement regarding road maintenance. Nat said in a previous interview that the mall had asked the MTD to pay $1,500 monthly fee despite the board previously rejecting the idea in 2023. Mall owner Brookfield Properties, on the other hand, has said that it never asked the Mass Transit District to stop service at our shopping center. "For many years, our property has taken a serious toll from the heavy equipment, and our pavement now requires constant repair," company officials said earlier this month. "We asked for their partnership in finding a solution to help maintain our property while still providing this benefit to the community." Once the MTD is unable to enter the mall property, this will mean that they cannot use the shopping center's roads to turn around, which means that it's easy to get to the bus stop in front of Salvation Army, but harder to get back, Nat said. Under the newly approved route, buses will serve North Market Street as part of a mid-route diversion to the Apollo Drive area, which is where drivers will turn around, Rank said. This will add 8 to 10 minutes to trip times. The diversions have been set in the past to match the shift changes at FedEx, Rank said. "So what we proposed is 6:48, 7:23, 7:53, 8:33 a.m., and then 1:03, 2:33, 4:03, 5:33 p.m. trip. So note that there's a gap between 8:33 and 1:03, so we could fill that in to make it more acceptable. He envisions it as a northbound diversion only. Captain Kenyon Civils said that the Salvation Army's North Market Street location is open from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Monday and 9 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. Tuesday through Friday. "We do have a number of people throughout the day who do come, he said. Without those intermittent trips in middle of the day, that would be tough. He said that the amount of time people spend at the Salvation Army varies. A client using the food pantry on a slow day could be in and out in 5 minutes, whereas an appointment for veteran services could take 2 hours. The path was one of two alternatives outlined by staff during the board meeting. The other would use the Wood Duck Lane and Twins Drive just north of the mall to travel west instead of Market View Drive. He also noted that the City of Champaign told the MTD it was willing to remove on-street parking on Twins Drive so that buses could use the road safely as part of this route. The route would likely provide regular service to North Market Street on weekdays, but not during the evening or on weekends, Rank said. Among other things, he preferred the approved route because it maintained service on Market View Drive, which is a highly commercial area with very good ridership. Additionally, he noted that mall customers and employees will get off at the corner of North Neal and Center Drive under the approved route, while the other route would have provided service to the mall on North Market Street. People would need to then cross Market, and then they're coming in pretty far from the entrance, said Deputy Managing Director Amy Snyder. Civils also said he preferred the approved route. Susan Millen, teacher at second and third grades in St. John Lutheran School, Champaign, is the teacher of the week. For nearly three decades, Susan Millen has been an institution at St. John Lutheran School. After a stint in Chicago, the Danville native began her tenure at St. John in 1996, and the longest-tenured teacher has become a mentor to students and teachers alike. I find my work important because I find my teaching in a Lutheran school important because it allows me to integrate faith and learning, helping students grow not only academically but also spiritually. I have the opportunity to model Christ-like love, guide students in understanding their identity in Christ, and foster a community grounded in grace, service, and truth. Teaching in a Lutheran environment means I can openly share the gospel and support students in developing a faith that guides their daily lives. I became a Lutheran teacher because I felt called to combine my passion for education with my faith, guiding students not only in academics, but also in their spiritual growth. My favorite or most unique lesson that I teach is the integration of biblical truths into everyday decision-making, helping students see how faith shapes character and choices beyond the classroom. My most fulfilling moments on the job are when I see a student have a light bulb moment, not just academically but spiritually, when they begin to understand how deeply God's love applies to their own lives. I keep students engaged by connecting lessons to their everyday lives, using interactive activities, and creating a classroom environment where questions, creativity, and faith explorations are encouraged. Something else I'm passionate about is building relationships with my students, their families, and my colleagues, because I believe genuine connection is the foundation for meaningful learning and spiritual growth. My favorite teacher and subject to study in school was Miss Pfefferly at Trinity Lutheran School in Danville. She was my second grade teacher. My favorite subject was reading. I loved getting lost in stories and discovering new worlds through books. I continue my passion for reading by encouraging my students to explore books that spark their imagination and curiosity, and to see books as windows to new worlds, ideas, and perspectives. If I weren't a teacher, I would be. That's a hard one because I've always wanted to be a teacher, especially one who gets to teach about Jesus. Sharing his love and truth with students has always felt like my true calling. And Mike Hale's Records and Radio column, father of Top 40 Radio, New Secret to Success. What got me hooked on radio as a career was AM Top 40. In 1966, at the conclusion of eighth grade, my last English class assignment was to write about my life in the year 2000 and what I would be doing. First, I was convinced our mode of travel would be flying cars. My career, working at either KXOK AM or WHB AM, spinning the hits. My paper got an A, but 34 years later, I was wrong regarding technology. No flying cars, and music on AM radio was long gone. Before I dive into finishing up the Illinois AM Top 40 discussion, a quiz question. According to Billboard, name the five most successful artists in terms of single songs during the golden age of AM Top 40 radio, 1955 to 82. Answers at the end of the column. Thanks for the huge response regarding WLS and especially the stories about your listening habits and meeting the personalities. My biggest surprise was the number of KXOK fans from back in the day. KXOK became a big-time radio factor very quickly in St. Louis. Late in 1960, the station was purchased by Storrs Broadcasting. Todd Storrs was the father of Top 40 Radio, starting with KOWH Omaha in the early 1950s. He experimented with his programming ideas. Simply play the hits, be first with news, and engage listeners with station promotions. Within 18 months, this daytime-only radio station had over half the listenership in Omaha. His next purchase was WTIX New Orleans. His true test was WHB Kansas City in 1954. Within 6 months, over half of Kansas City had their radios on 710 WHB. Quickly thereafter, WDGY Minneapolis, WQAM Miami, and KOMA Oklahoma City were purchased by Storrs. His final acquisition was KXOK. St. Louis at the time was the ninth biggest radio market in the country, with two established AM Top 40 stations, KWK and WIL. In short order, colorful 1380 KWK dropped Top 40. 1430 WIL had great air talent, but WIL did not believe the Top 40 landscape was evolving. After all, they had been on top in music radio since 1957. Owners Balaban, same company that owned WICS and WIC-TV locally for decades, did not invest in the product. The station sounded the same in the early 1966 as it did in 1963. But WIL's fatal error was not recognizing the impact of the Beatles, whereas KXLK was the Beatles station, having Louise Harrison from Benton, George's sister, on staff. WIL gave up the fight in 1966, and for the last 50-plus years has been St. Louis's top country music station. Back at KXOK, with low dial position of 630, they had the best daytime signal of any St. Louis station, better than KMOX in the daylight hours. At night, KXOK easily covered key Illinois markets like Springfield and Carbondale. The Todd Storrs formula worked again, and quickly KXOK went from a 4 share in St. Louis to a 22 share. Bud Connell was the programmer who made KXOK into a powerhouse. The Big 630 with great personalities like Ray Otis, Johnny Rabbit, William A. Hopkins, Nick Charles, Peter Martin, and Mort Crowley, combined with the best music nonstop promotions and award-winning news staff and a technical sound that leaped out of your speakers. For several reasons, KXOK unfortunately did not have the long run like WLS into the mid-80s. First, Todd Storrs, the creative genius, unexpectedly passed away in 1964. Control of the stations passed to Todd's father, Robert, the bean counter of the company. The 1968 programming guru, Bud Connell, was fired by Robert for suggesting that the company look at purchasing a St. Louis FM facility. For the next 4 years, KXOK was the only 24/7 Top 40 station in St. Louis, a license to print money, which they did quite well. In 1972, in quick succession, KSLQ-FM went Top 40, attacking the lower end of KXOK's demos, while KSDAM went after KXOK's upper end. St. Louis ratings never fully recovered. Ironically, the Big 630 continued dominating outside St. Louis until WDBR-FM Springfield and WCIL-FM Carbondale launched as Top 40s. KXOK Advertising survived for a handful of years thanks to their strong sales department and market relationships. Read more about WLS and KXOK in The Birth of Top 40 Radio by Richard M. Farley and David T. McFarlane, Chicago's WLS Radio by Scott Childers, and Chicago's Personality Radio, WLS, by Stu Salowitz. I appreciate your response to these columns. Reach out with column ideas. Top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. The Champaign County Freedom Celebration Parade has a new route and starting time, but a familiar face leading the way. Philo's Alvin Decker is back as Grand Marshal after a rain canceled last year's 4th of July parade through campus. The 99-year-old and his family are the perfect fit for the theme America Celebrates Pride of the Heartland. The Deckers have two centennial farms in their family, one dating to 1885 near Sadorus from their mother's side and one started in 1902 in rural Philo on Alvin's side. To keep crowds from making separate trips, the parade start has been pushed from 11 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. as a forerunner to that Friday's celebration, Friday's entertainment and fireworks just west of State Farm Center. The new route mimics the path used during homecoming at the University of Illinois. Out, the morning 5K and youth run. In, a bingo night June 7th at the Elks Club in Savoy. A new twist as organizers try to raise enough money to keep an event that started in 1949 afloat. Email info@july4th.net to donate, volunteer, or register for the parade. Judge dismisses suit, gives 14 days to file amended complaint. A local barbecue restaurant's $3.5 million lawsuit against the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District and its employees has been dismissed, but the case is likely to come before the court again soon. Champaign County Associate Judge Rhonda Holloman granted the health district's motion to dismiss Suey Brothers Barbecue Joint's complaint during a hearing on Wednesday morning. However, she did so without prejudice and gave co-owner Alvin Allison 14 days to file an amended complaint. He plans to do so, and the currently closed business wrote on its social media that the matter is far from over. Defendants in the case include the health district, Environmental Health Director Sarah Michaels, Environmental Health Specialist Ramey Wilson, Food Program Coordinator Penny Murphy, and Administrator Julie Pry. Allison originally filed the lawsuit against the health district and Michaels for $40,000 on February 28th, the day after his business received a red placard and an order to close. He later updated the complaint to include additional defendants and amended the amount of damages, alleging that the health district and its employees have caused irreparable harm, mental anguish, and devastating financial damage to me personally and my business. The suit is one of two legal disputes between the restaurant and the health district. The other concluded in late April with Champaign County Judge Jason Bohm ruling that a previously granted injunction to keep the eatery closed will remain in place until Allison either comes into compliance with the existing food service plan dated February 2, 2023, or submits an amended plan that is approved by the health district. The health district originally ordered Suey Brothers to close in late February, citing a lack of refrigeration due to its walk-in cooler not being in operation. Allison and co-owner Isis Griffin have argued that the order is unfair and that their commercial reach-in refrigerator exceeds the necessary requirements for reducing temperatures. Mr. Allison has repeatedly pointed out that none of these FDA regulations require a walk-in cooler. Bohm wrote in his final order, "While that is true, it misses the point. He was required by his food service plan to use the walk-in cooler and to receive approval before changing the utilized equipment." Suey Brothers initially refused to close, but eventually shut its doors March 12th after Bohm granted the health district's request for an injunction. During Wednesday's hearing, Holloman told Allison, "There are several things on your complaint that are not clear." For instance, she requested clarity on the amount of damages sought, noting that Allison wrote in one section that the damages exceeded $50,000 and later stated that the defendants owed him $3.5 million. The amount sought will determine whether the matter stays in small claims court, Holloman said. She also agreed with the defendants' arguments that the complaint makes a wide range of allegations against each of the defendants that are vague. She said that the accusations should be stated concisely and separated into individual paragraphs. Allison said during Wednesday's hearing that he had already planned to ask for the opportunity to submit a revised complaint. Additionally, he told the judge that while the motion to dismiss states that he appears to seek punitive damages, this is inaccurate. He claimed that the amount sought is backed up by the financial damage he has suffered, including losses due to being closed. And there's a photograph of the former C.S. Johnson factory site taken on May 8th, were included in Tuesday's Champaign City Council packet. $6.6 million incentive proposed for cleanup of brownfield site. Company plans to build three-story apartment buildings at location of former C.S. Johnson factory. The city is considering a tax increment financing incentive for community property management's efforts to remediate a site near the corner of Kenwood Drive and Springfield Avenue in preparation for the development of new apartments. The Champaign City Council discussed a proposed development agreement at its meeting Tuesday night and directed staff to draft the official document. Economic Development Manager T.J. Blakeman estimated the matter will return to council for an approval vote in about a month. Under the proposed terms, the city would reimburse the company using 100% of the increment the project generates for the Springfield and Mattis TIF district in an amount not to exceed $6.6 million or a term of 10 years, whichever occurs first, said Associate Planner David Sapphire. A one-year extension is available under certain conditions. Eligible expenses for reimbursement would include demolition, environmental remediation, and utility work for the site at 506 Kenwood Road. Community Property Management plans to build three-story apartment buildings with approximately 230 one- and two-bedroom market-rate units at the site, which is home to the former C.S. Johnson factory, Sapphire said. The company has previously used the property for storage purposes. The former factory is a brownfield site, Sapphire wrote in a report to council. Wall failures, broken windows, and cracked pavement have made it unsafe and visually deteriorated. Obsolete industrial infrastructure, large utility easements, and soil contamination complicate redevelopment. He noted that the site is one block south of Champaign Park Apartments, where nearly 500 lower rent units have been condemned. We're excited about the prospect of adding these new apartments to the area, which will also include significant amenity space for residents. Nathan Shoemaker, CEO of Community Property Management, told the News Gazette's Kathy Reiser, "We anticipate being able to share more detailed plans soon." Next generation 8th grade student named 8th grade champion. Eris Smargadis has a history of placing high in national competition. A student at Champaign's Next Generation School was named the 8th grade champion in the national finals of the Great History Challenge in Orlando. Eris Smargadis Gogdis was among tens of thousands of students from across the country who initially competed at a series of regional events and finally the national championship level that saw more than 400 of the top middle school students, history students in the U.S. compete. Smaragdis and fellow Next Generation student Tommy Rasmussen made it to the top 10 of the 8th grade competition. Smaragdis won that grade level's competition and finished second place in the nation overall. He finished runner-up for the overall title, competing with the top three champions from each grade in a speed buzzer round. A total of 65,000 students competed in the initial testing to then make it to the final step. This has been Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette, Part 1. Please stay tuned for Part 2.